We are the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short.
Hello, welcome to the Papers podcast series for the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short. I'm Jo Carlo, a freelance journalist with a specialism in psychology. In this series, we speak to authors of papers published in one of ACAM's three journals. These are the Journal of Child Psychology and Psychiatry, commonly known as JCPP, the Child and Adolescent Mental Health, known as CAM, and JCPP Advances. Today I'm interviewing Leila Chorlish of the Department of Psychiatry and Psychotherapy, Jena University Hospital, Jena, Germany, and Professor Hilary Blomberg of the Department of Psychiatry at Yale School of Medicine in Connecticut. Both are authors on the paper, Brain, Grey and White Matter Structural Associations with Future Suicidal Ideation and Behaviours in Adolescent and Young Adult Females with Mood Disorders, recently published in JCPP Advances. This will be the focus of today's podcast. If you're a fan of our Papers podcast series, please subscribe on your preferred streaming platform. Let us know how we did with a rating or review, and do share with friends and colleagues. Leila and Hilary, welcome. Thanks for joining me. Can you each start with a brief introduction about who you are and what you do?
So my name is Leila Chorlish. Your pronunciation was perfect. Thank you so much. I'm a junior group leader in the Department of Psychiatry and Psychotherapy in University Hospital of Vienna, and I focus on investigating childhood adversity in adulthood and in adolescence and their clinical and brain correlates, specifically focusing on suicidal thoughts and behaviors.
And Hilary?
And I'm Hilary Blomberg. I'm a psychiatrist, and I've been on Yale's faculty for about 25 years, where I direct the mood disorder research program. And when Dr. Chorlish was at Yale, I was fortunate to work with her. So I'm very happy to be here today with her.
Great. Thank you very much. So let's turn to your paper. This is Brain, Grey and White Matter Structural Associations with Future Suicidal Ideation and Behaviours in Adolescent and Young Adult Females with Mood Disorders, which was recently published in JCPP Advances. Can you set the scene for us? What did you look at and why?
Death by suicide is the second leading cause of death for adolescents and young adults worldwide. And these ages are also the times when suicide ideation behaviors often emerge. And adolescents and young adulthood are also very dynamic times for brain development. Frontal brain areas implicated in suicide thoughts and behaviors and the white matter tracts that connect them are maturing. Complex behaviors that are subserved by these brain areas, such as emotion regulation and decision-making, also important in suicidal ideation and behavior, are also maturing. So study of adolescents and young adults is important to identify the brain differences underlying the development of suicide risk, better understand the causes, and to generate improved methods for early detection and prevention of suicide. And we were fortunate to receive funding from the MQ Foundation in the UK to bring together the work of researchers across international sites in what we call the HOPES, or Help Overcome and Prevent the Emergence of Suicide Research Consortium, that made the work in this paper possible. And especially important aspects of this study were the age group, as most prior studies have been of adults. And also, most prior studies have looked at the brain in persons who had made prior suicide attempts. But here we looked at whether participants made an attempt in the future, and that can provide very important information for prevention.
That's really clear. Thank you. Can you tell us a little about the methodology that you used for the study?
So as Hilary mentioned, we really focused on this dynamic age period, so adolescence and young adulthood, and we focused on participants with mood disorders, so participants who had either diagnosis of bipolar disorder or major depressive disorder. We used magnetic resonance imaging, or as we say, MRI scanning, to look at the brain, gray matter and white matter tracts. We also completed comprehensive clinical assessments, where we looked at not only past suicidal ideation and presence of past suicidal ideation and behavior, but also we then followed up our participants for at least 1 year And then we assess them again with the same comprehensive questionnaire. And as Hillary said, this is a really, really unique data set because not only we targeted this specific age group, but we also used CSSRS, which is really clear and comprehensive questionnaire looking at these complex constructs. We then divided our participants into three groups: those who have not had any suicidal ideation or behaviors in this follow-up period, those that showed only suicidal ideation but not behaviors, and then those participants who had also suicidal behavior in this follow-up period. We also then looked at the differences between these brain regions and tracts between these groups, and then we can move on to the results.
Okay, I'm interested to hear. Can I just check, when you talk about the age group, what was the age range?
The age range was between 14 and 25 years. So we did cover up adolescence and young adulthood just because of the sample characteristics, but also we kind of wanted to not look only until age 18 because our brain matures until we're around 25. So we really wanted to catch up also that period of young adulthood.
Well, let's turn to the findings. What can you share? If you could perhaps give us an overview of the key findings that emerged.
So the most important finding in our study was that the adolescents who did show suicidal ideation or suicidal behavior in this follow-up period have decreases in cortical thickness in frontal brain regions, which are involved in emotional regulation and decision-making. And these include, as I said, lower cortical thickness in frontal areas and also temporal areas. There were also decreases in white matter tracts that connect these temporal and frontal areas, which are also have been previously implicated in emotion regulation and decision-making. And some of these changes that we observed were also previously reported in adults with past suicide ideation and behaviors, suggesting that changes in these brain areas really do carry a certain increase for suicidal ideation and behaviors.
As you've just described then, the paper finds that females with future suicide ideation and behaviors showed decreases in cortical thickness and some other differences in the brain regions subserving emotional and behavioral regulation. Can you explain the significance of this, but in lay terms?
Absolutely. So we believe that it is very important that these new findings identify brain differences that may increase risk for future suicide ideation and suicide behaviors, as these may be key targets for new suicide prevention strategies and also therapeutical approaches.
And just for the lay person who perhaps doesn't have that much understanding of the different regions of the brain, can you say about the significance of the cortical thickness?
So cortical thickness is a measure of the structural integrity of our brain. So although we cannot really measure, for example, how plastic our brain is as we can with animals, cortical thickness does change throughout aging and during this period. So we do believe that these also maturation, that our findings also indicate certain maturational differences between the participants that show suicidal ideation and behaviors.
Are these neurobiological differences genetic, environmental, or developmental, or some combination of all of these? And depending on your answer, what does this mean in terms of brain plasticity and the reversibility of biomarkers that suggest a young person is at increased risk of suicidal ideation or behaviors?
As your question suggests, the possible contributing causes can be complex and multifactorial. We can't determine the causes from this study, but we're investigating causes, which is an important aspect of our ongoing work and our planned future work. But as you say, since the brain is so plastic, especially while it's maturing in adolescence in this frontal temporal brain circuitry, there's great hope that the development of the differences can be halted, or if they've occurred, potentially reversed. And there is a great deal of research taking place, some at our sites and also at other sites, on genetic, environmental, and developmental factors and interactions among them, that's showing that there are multiple ways to increase the health of this brain circuitry.
It's really positive to know that. You focused on young and adolescent females. What was the reason for that? And are the findings relevant for males as well?
What we definitely noticed from the literature and also, for example, clearly from her clinical practice is that one important aspect in suicidal ideation and behaviors is gender. And this aspect also often neglected or not specifically looked at. So, for example, young adult women, there's a higher chance that they will attempt suicide than males in their age groups. Also, in our sample, more women showed suicidal ideation and behaviors than men. So we kind of wanted to focus on them also to be able to have enough power to look at these brain differences. And as you suggested, because we focus only on women, we do really need to replicate our findings also in populations that have all genders included.
In your paper, you suggest the findings may aid targeted interventions through pharmacological, neurostimulation, or psychotherapy approaches. Can you elaborate on this? How do you envisage your research being translated into practice to better identify and better support adolescents at risk of suicidal ideation and behaviours?
So the very good news is that there are many potential ways to target the brain circuitry that we observed in this study. This could include medications that target neurotransmitters and other molecular mechanisms acting in this circuitry. Another is to target the anatomical areas using neurostimulation methods, such as rapid transcranial magnetic stimulation. And there are other ways to stimulate the brain and many new ones that are emerging. Talk therapies can also be very helpful. And there are also things that individuals can do for themselves to help their brain health, including increasing the regularity of their sleep and other daily routines, which can actually be robust in helping to strengthen the health of the brain circuitry that's involved to prevent suicide. We and others have also observed adverse effects on the brain circuitry of stressors, such as exposure to childhood maltreatment. This is especially an area that Dr. Cholich is really, you know, a world expert in. And so preventing these types of social stressors that she's looking at can also be very important in reducing suicide risk. And we and others are finding in our research that these types of strategies can actually improve the functioning of the brain circuitry involved and thereby decrease the mood symptoms and suicide risk.
Is there anything else in the paper that you'd like to highlight?
So what I can say for me as a non-clinician, I'm a neuroscientist and neurobiologist by training, what was extremely striking to me was that 44% of our sample had suicidal behavior in the follow-up and 36% had suicidal ideation. So that's over 70% of participants showed some kind of suicidal thoughts and behaviors in this follow-up period. And even though we were expecting and investigating an especially clinically severe population, so adolescents with BD or MDD, still it was really a fact that then highlighted the importance of further research and work in this age group to improve suicide prevention. So that's kind of a fact that was really, really striking for me.
Well, you just mentioned future research. So are you planning some follow-up research? Or is there anything else in the pipeline for either or both of you that you'd like to share with us?
So as Hilary mentioned before, I'm really, really interested in looking at the effects of early life stress, so of childhood maltreatment. So I'm following up on that area, investigating the effects in adolescents as well as in adults. I'm also using magnetic resonance imaging, which allows us to look at the levels of different neurometabolites. So I'm interested to look at contributions of GABAergic system in these interactions between early life stress and clinical severity.
In our group at Yale, we are also continuing the brain scanning work, and we're looking at mechanisms that may be contributing to the brain differences and neurodevelopmental differences through genetic and stem cell research. And we're studying the effects of talk therapies. And we're especially excited about emerging findings that if adolescents and young adults improve the regularity of their sleep and other routines, that can be robust in improving the health of their brain circuitry and in reducing suicide risk. And we're also performing some research with digital devices. And I think that can give us really important information in time. And that can be very important because you want to detect suicide risk at its earliest stages to prevent it.
It's a really exciting area, isn't it? Finally, Leila and Hilary, what are your take-home messages for our listeners?
I would say that this is one example of research that's going on across the world that's advancing in identifying the causes and finding new ways to prevent suicide so that the future is very hopeful that we will be better able to prevent suicide in the future.
I just want to echo what Hilary said. I think there's more and more international research dedicated to looking at mechanisms of suicidal ideation behavior, not only through imaging, but also through, as Hilary mentioned, stem cell research, genetic research, and also using actigraphy and mobile devices. So I think more international efforts are needed also to look at differences, not only biological, but also cultural and socioeconomic. So I'm really hopeful in that sense that by increasing our international collaborations, we can really tackle this worldwide phenomena.
Brilliant. Thank you both so much. For more details on Dr. Leila Chorlich and Professor Hilary Blomberg, please visit the ACAM website, www.acam.org, and Twitter at ACAM. ACAM is spelled A-C-A-M-H. And don't forget to follow us on your preferred streaming platform. Let us know if you enjoyed the podcast with a rating or review, and do share with friends and colleagues.